get off my plane.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I'm Ross Bacon. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike McQuigan. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing?
And as you should know by now, we are two dudes who drink and talk about movies. Now, this week, we are talking about two political thrillers, action thrillers, involving hijacked planes and government officials. We're talking Executive Decision and Air Force One. At some point, one of us will be thrown out of a plane and have our neck broken on the way down. We will not spoil who it's going to be, though. The other one, though, will die falling out of a refueling truck.
Yeah, yeah.
Refueling plane. That's just how it's going to be. But the one in the refueling plane is going to happen about halfway through, like a quarter of the way through the show. So you're just going to have to be surprised when it happens, okay? But
yeah, and then the other person's going to do the solo show after that.
Yep. Yeah, it'll just be the solo show after that. But yeah. So Executive Decision, Air Force One. For that, though, we got to talk about what we're drinking. So, Mike, what do you got?
All right. So we're recording on a Tuesday. Normally we record on Sunday, the Super Bowl Sunday this weekend. But it was also Lunar New Year this weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had a lovely Japanese whiskey that I think, I don't know if it's an exclusive to Total Wine, but I've yet to see it anywhere else. It is Kaigen Blended Malt Whiskey. I have the aged 8 year. I also tried the not aged one. I like the not aged one so much that I went back to see if it was worth getting the 8 year. So the 8 year is definitely better, but the price difference, I'd say just go for the not aged one. Not aged one's like a $40 bottle. The 8 year is like $70.
Those 8 years, they're worth $30.
But it's 43% alcohol, product of Japan. It's a limited release. It doesn't say what region of Japan it's in, but this distillery is situated in the Kami region of Japan, where Mount Mikuni and the Sugihara River flows. Okay, so I think that's northern Japan.
Where the Kamis are?
Hey, Kami means God in Japanese.
I meant that to the Soviets, too.
So, and I'm also drinking it out of my Lucky Rabbit Frosted Rocks glass. Another product of Japan. So I'm really getting into the Lunar New Year, even though I don't have a Lucky Dragon one, because this is the year of the dragon.
I was say, is it made out of dragon? Does it have dragon flakes in it?
But this is such a smooth whiskey. I love it.
Yeah?
Well, I could down like four glasses of it or so, like it's nothing.
No, you said bottles first. You have to do bottles.
Dies of alcohol poisoning. Didn't taste a sip of it. Didn't burn a bit, but I did die of alcohol poisoning.
He did die, though, but he achieved his goal. So there's at least that. But, all right. So, yeah. And since we are discussing some hot political action thrillers, I have Juices by Departed Souls. And it's got like a $2 bill art, like can art with kind of a sexy Statue of Liberty. She's got her crown off. She's chilling on a park bench. She's hanging out up in where was that? Jersey City. That's where that place is. So yeah, I guess the Statue of Liberty takes her breaks in Jersey City, I guess. But it's good. It's 7.4, so it's a little stronger than I usually get. But it's an IPA in it. It has IPA flavor to it, so it's not terrible, but it's not my favorite. It's fine. It's good, though.
All right.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of the piney taste to it, but it's fine.
Yeah, my favorite thing to do is to go to breweries with my mom, get flights, and get one I know is going to be piney, take a sip of it, and go, Mom, this doesn't even taste like an IPA. Then watch the face she makes.
You gotta try this. It's awful.
Gets her every time.
Right. All right, so Mike, we have to discuss one of the greatest, the movies, one of the greatest hostage movies of all time in Air Force One, the legendary get off my plane line by literal President Ford. And then we discuss the oft-forgotten John Leguizamo, Kurt Russell vehicle, his Steven Seagal fake-out movie, Executive Decision. Now, since you've been doing this up until this point, I will leave it to you. How are we breaking this down?
This was a tough one for me to think of creative categories. I don't know why. Like, okay. Part of me at one point was like, all right, let's do a comparison on which movie villain could you mistake as being Sam Rockwell? Because because I thought, why is his name escaping me?
Gary Oldman?
Gary Oldman. I thought Gary Oldman looked so much like Sam Rockwell in that movie.
Kind of does. He kind of does.
All right. So the first one I want to compare with is, which plane do you think makes for a more interesting action set? Air Force One versus a more open kind of just jet airliner.
It's the regular passenger airliner, yeah.
Which movie has the better death? Like, you gotta pick the best death from each movie. Which movie has the better one? Okay. So not better deaths overall, singular death.
Okay.
Obviously, we're going to do protagonist, love interest, villain, villain team. Which movie has the worst B-plot?
Okay.
So this is the first one we're doing. We're doing two negative categories. You don't want to win these categories.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay. So which one has the worst B-plot, and which one wastes a super talented actor more?
Oh, all right. Yeah, that's okay. And that one's definitely, I mean, I'm going to jump the gun on that one and say it's literally anyone on John Leguizamo's team, basically, versus William H. Macy.
I'm going to say they totally waste Glenn Close.
They do. Yeah, Glenn Close. It's Glenn Close in Air Force One. But then again, William H. Macy is just chilling in Air Force One. He's just hanging out the whole time. It's like four lines. And then an executive decision.
Let's just start there since we already jumped the gun on it.
Yeah, might as well start with it. So we're starting with, okay, so are we going to pick between Glenn and William H. Macy for Air Force One at least? Like, which one are we doing? Because they both are kind of wasted.
Wait, so there's, let's see. They kind of waste. Who do you think the two most wasted in Executive Decision are? Oliver Platt and B.D. Wong?
Well, okay. My personal thoughts on B.D. Wong aside, simply because Dr. Wu in Jurassic Park has poisoned my feelings for B.D. Wong himself. While the man has done nothing wrong to me, it's the character of Dr. Wu that I simply cannot abide that man. And by embodying him, that knocks B.D. Wong down a bit. But B.D. Wong, you got to figure at this point in his career, because this was 96. So in this point in his career, he's playing the right level of character for his career. I would argue that this movie wastes either Halle Berry or it wastes Andreas Katsoulis. So Andreas Katsoulis is the one-armed man from The Fugitive. He's a very good actor. But he has nothing to do in this movie because he's not that big yet.
All right, what if we split this up and do Halle Berry versus Glenn Close and Macy versus Andreas Katsoulis?
Okay, that's fine. And I just wanted to let you know that the IMDb app that I'm looking at the executive decision cast on, there's a glitch on it, and Oliver Platt's picture is Marla Maples. you really want to get that vision going, have Marla Maples, who does not have a single line in this movie. Marla Maples Crump is as she's credited because that's who she was at the time. She has zero lines in this movie. So imagine Oliver Platt's voice coming out of her. I mean, Marla Maples in 1996 is a very gorgeous woman. But if she sounds like Oliver Platt, that's like, oh man, I may never get aroused again. You know?
Yeah.
That's somehow worse than knowing she was married to Donald Trump, you know?
All right. So I think we should start with Andreas Casulis versus William H. Macy.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, these guys were right in the wheelhouse of these dudes could be supporting actors. Like, these dudes are
Yeah, that's
supporting
I feel like
actors.
William H. Macy didn't really take off as like yeah, I'm not sure he's ever been an A-lister, but with Shameless, that's what put him closest to it.
It did, yeah, but he was in Fargo, you know,
Yeah.
he's in a whole bunch of stuff. Like, every time William H. Macy's in something, you're like, oh wow, he never detracts from what he's in. And it's so funny because Catsoulis in this is basically just a henchman. Not even really a henchman. He's like a hostage, basically, in this. And he's not a hostage of our terrorists. He's a hostage, a government prisoner is basically what he is. Because both of these movies start the way that Hot Shots Part Deux starts, with a raid on a compound, and one of which, an executive decision, is for a nerve agent. It's for nerve gas. It's for a bioweapon, and the other is for a person in Jorgen Prochnow in Air Force One. But the fact that the two different people that are being held are also, like, we could break this down to the separate political hostages, political prisoners that are being taken, because then it's Cassilis versus Jürgen Prochnow. Jürgen Prochnow is an amazing actor. Das Boot is one of the, prime examples of that. But again, this man is like a face on a screen for all intents and
Yeah.
purposes, and then he gets shot in the back of the head. But I would say if we're going Macy versus Cassilis, Cassilis is wasted, but William H.
I feel like
Macy,
Macy is, it's like he's
he's
got
more
more
wasted.
to, but he also has more expectations.
Yeah, his expectations are much higher. His bar is much higher, and they do not even come close to clearing it. Like, the man is literally in a room for the entire movie until the very end when he gets shot by Xander Berkeley. That's it. It's nothing. It's a movie. He has two lines, and that's
Yeah.
it.
So I'm gonna go with Macy as
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, there's really no argument there.
the better discussion now is Glenn Close, who granted has a lot of lines, but I feel like they just it's gonna lead to my opinion in the other bad category. I think that B plot is like a nothing plot. Like, why are we even paying attention to this?
He's the vice president in Air Force One, and her job in this movie is to either talk to the terrorists and basically just be like, we need more time. That's essentially all she says. Or she's in the middle of trying to not have what it basically amounts to a mutiny of the presidency. She, like, the Secretary of Defense tries to enact constitutional law to get a cabinet majority to displace Harrison Ford as president and install Glenn Close, simply because the man might be a hostage on a plane. And he does this very quickly. So a slightly smarter movie, maybe even more cliche movie, would have him be part of it. You
Yeah.
know, he would be part of the bag. He'd be part of Oldman's team, but he's not.
Or
So
even have like Glenn Close be like the mastermind.
yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of what movie it is, and I think it's Iron Man 3
Three,
is what I'm
that
thinking
where
of.
but the vice president, his daughter was missing a limb and he wants to regrow her limb, so he agrees to help get rid of the president.
And so it would make more sense for that B plot if that were the case, but. And other than that, it's like, well, what the hell are we? Why is this here? Is this just to add some weird level of tension that doesn't need to be here? And clearly, some screenwriter was like, you know what? I'm just going for it. I am going to write every possible line of tension in this movie, and I'm going to wedge it in whether you like it or not. And then an executive decision. What's the B plot in executive decision? Is it the bomb defusal? Because that's part of the A plot.
Yeah, that's. I was kind of stretching for this because there's not too much of a B plot in Executive Decision, I guess.
I mean, it's really more of a drop thread because in the beginning of this movie, the raid that goes wrong is led by Steven Seagal. And it doesn't really go wrong so much as it's like Geraldo opening up Al Capone's vault. There's nothing in it. The biological weapon is gone. There's nothing to find. Now, Kurt Russell was the one whose intel got that raid approved. So Steven Seagal, though he doesn't ever really say it, you can tell like despises or just doesn't like Kurt Russell's character because of that. And he almost brings him on the mission out of spite. And they don't really do anything with that because Steven Seagal is not a good actor. So you can't let him actually have dialogue. And
And
it's
apparently
not.
he, spoiler alert, dies about an hour in,
Right.
and like there's speculation as to why, but apparently he fought John Leguizamo on set, I think.
I'm sure he did because Steven Seagal is a well-known dick. John
Wait, but
Leguizamo doesn't
apparently
take shit.
so did like I think there's like three stories of like Uzama getting into fights. Apparently he was very much an instigator on set.
Oh, and I could definitely see that too. You know, like young John Leguizamo is his kind of whole personality, at least his entertainer personality, was of being like the little like scrappy Puerto Rican guy, even though he's Colombian. You know, it's one of those things where you're like, okay, do you need to take the character home with you, kind of thing. It's like, do you need to be method with this particular role here, John?
This is one of the main reasons that like I had a hard time doing a comparison because like I don't even know necessarily who the leading man to be compared to Harrison Ford is because sometimes it's Kurt Russell, sometimes it's John Leguizamo at the start of the movie, sometimes it's Steven Seagal. Like I think it's Russell or Leguizamo, but like, I couldn't decide.
I would say by virtue of who gets the hero shot riding off into the sunset at the end, it's Kurt Russell.
And his pictures on the poster and stuff.
Yeah,
Have
and
you
he's the
so
name.
apparently there was an original run of the poster where Seagal was supposed to be on it too. Did
I could see that.
you ever see that? Because it's kind of hilarious. Like,
No.
so in a couple countries he is on the poster.
Oh wait, is it the one there? It's like Ultimate Decision. It's like the French cover,
Yeah.
where his like half of his face is kind of like cut off in the corner of the page.
And it's just floating there, like there's no like fade on his body. It's just his head.
It's just his head, and so it's half of his head staring. That's pretty great. I love that. Yeah, that's hilarious. it's just the normal poster, but instead of like the hangar door on the right side of the American poster, it's the Seagal's face. So it's like, oh, okay. This is weird. But yeah, I mean, because we can't. That's the thing with these two movies. Executive Decision, despite what the title says, does not involve a president at any point.
Nope.
It involves a senator at one point, but then there's Harrison Ford as President Harrison Ford, you know, in Air Force One. His
There's
kids are
very much
there.
one protagonist that you are meant to follow through Air Force
Yeah.
One.
Yeah, he's President James, he's James something or other, who knows? But it's his whole family's there. It's literally on Air Force One, the president's plane and all that. So it's and the point is to take the president hostage, which of course they don't do because of movie reasons. But it's definitely, and I if we're talking about an actual plot thread, like an actual story, it's got to be Glenn Close because it's an actual attempt at a storyline.
Yeah.
Whereas it's an executive decision, they just have a lot of avenues that don't go anywhere. You know, they do like they start off on one path and then they cut off on another. It's like, oh, okay, I guess we're just going this way now. Why not?
I do think exactly just because it doesn't lead anywhere, but I hate the B plot in
It's not great. Yeah. But the thing is, though, is I'm not like, it sounds like we're saying Executive Decision is not a good movie. It's a very watchable
both
movie.
movies are fairly fun. We're just starting with the negatives.
Right. Yeah, it's just Executive Decision is one of those 90s movies where we played this. I don't have it set up again so I can pop quiz Mike, but we have our Seagal movie or airport novel game that we can play. But when you're watching Executive Decision, you're very much like, oh man, this is an airport novel that my dad would read on a business trip,
Yeah, are we sure that this isn't an adaptation of an airport novel?
I don't think either of them are. That's the craziest part. And because you know Tom Clancy had to have accidentally written one of these movies, you know?
That's one of the reasons I didn't go with the 90s vibe is because like it's so clearly executive decision. Like executive decision just feels like a 90s action movie, where Air Force One, like because your two main actors are such heavy hitters, it doesn't really have a vibe of a specific decade to me.
Right. Yeah. And I'm looking at the Wikipedia for Air Force One. There is a novelization of that, but it came out as a novelization of the movie. It's not a novel that turned into the movie. And as all novelizations do, they like add information and expound on shit. And it's like, well, I get why it's not in the movie because someone saw a 2-hour runtime in 1996 and went, no one's going to sit through this. Which today would be a breeze. People were like, oh, 2 hours and 4 minutes, that's it? Do they not have the 30-minute setup for the television show Air Force One? You know?
I
But
mean, that's my biggest problem with Executive Decision is I didn't think that movie should have been 2 hours and 13 minutes.
it does it, but and that's the ironic thing is that I think Executive Decision moves faster than Air Force One does. And it doesn't, you don't feel the runtime as much with that one. It's only when you're done that you look back and you go, okay, well, why was Steven Seagal
Yeah.
there? Why did he need to be there? Why did we waste time with him in the beginning of this whole thing? We could have just done, oh, the raid failed in wherever. Let's try this next avenue, like, because we have clues about whatever. Like, no, you get this entire like raid that Steven Seagal has to be in because his contract says so. So if anything, I would say the B plot of the raid, the opening scene, is wasted. It's terrible as well because there's no point to it. It could be erased by a line of dialogue.
All right, so the raid has claimed one of the negative points, but I think we still got to decide with the wasted actors, Glenn Close versus Halle Berry, who is more wasted.
I mean, they both get equal garbage time on screen.
Like, yeah,
Like,
that's like they do get screen time. It's just, are they at, well, with Glenn Close. Yes, the B plot, I guess, is adding something, but I just feel like the writing for her character specifically is just so below her.
it is. It absolutely is. Because, and I don't, and this is going to sound mean, and I don't mean it this way, but they write her as if she were a woman. Glenn Close has never been an actress that you look at and you go, like, that's a female role she's playing. Other than Fatal Attraction, you always look at Glenn Close as like kind of like a tough guy, man's woman type of thing. Like, I don't know why. She's always just very authoritative and very like stereotypically masculine almost, you know? I never look at her as like a feminine character, you know? And so to have her be a vice president, they in the 1996, they're not going to have her be the character she should be, which is an authoritative politician. In this, they basically say that the vice presidency is a joke institution, and this woman happens to have that title, you know? And then Glenn Close is like, you know what? I needed a paycheck, and I'm in a movie with Harrison Ford. At least I'm on I'm in the movie. We don't ever share screen time, but I'm on the in the movie with him. I guess I'll do this garbage dialogue, which has me written as like a bad, worried housewife. You know, it's not a great role for her. Whereas Halle Berry, on the other hand, is like sex pot damsel in distress, which is Halle Berry's wheelhouse. You know,
that's what. So I think Glenn Close is more wasted than Halle Berry.
Yeah. He's a very much, I mean, Oscars aside, because I'm unchecked, and I'm not even checking my notes here. I don't think Glenn Close has an Oscar, but Halle does, you know? So it's kind of like, oh, okay. I guess by virtue of the Academy, which has made such great decisions, has said that Halle Berry is a better actress than Glenn Close, but here we go. Acting credits and awards. Glenn's okay. Nominations received by Glenn Close. Academy Award. She has been nominated 8 times, has won 0. So
that's ridiculous. She's like the 1990s Bills of the Academy Awards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's like the. She's literally the other Meryl Streep. You know, she's the forgotten Meryl Streep, or the Meryl Streep that falls by the wayside. And it sucks because Glenn Close is great. Glenn Close is great in most things she's in, you know? But in this movie, she's absolutely given nothing to do, and she's wasted. Whereas Halle Berry's basically playing the role that Halle Berry
played. It's a dumb
played.
Role, but Halle Berry has done that role several times.
And I'll give her, I mean, you can't knock it. In 1996, Halle Berry, one of the sexiest women ever, and she definitely plays that, like, that glassy-eyed, almost about to cry, trying to hold it together character that she did so, like, so many times. She plays it well, but she's not the caliber of actress at the time that I'd look at her and go, you know what, she could have done more in this movie. No, she does exactly what she needs to in the movie, which is write on her hand and hold it up to a camera. That's about all she needs to do. Whereas Glenn Close had to convincingly play a vice president, which she doesn't do.
All right, so I think that segues fairly well into the love interest.
Okay, I'm just going to question Air Force One's love interest, because it's the wife. It's his wife and daughter. Yeah. You know, so right there, we're pitting Halle Berry versus a wife and daughter who I cannot remember the actress's names for and do not come to my mind unless I look it up.
So that's why I think we're going to use the wife and daughter and Halle Berry and look at the scenes around them and how they influence the plot and what makes, like, in a movie sense, which love interest was used more effectively in the plot.
Okay, so for the record, in case they decide they listen to the show and they want to get after us, Wendy Crewson plays the first lady. She plays Grace Marshall. She is a Canadian actress who has not been in anything I've seen. Oh, wait, no, she's been in a couple things, but I don't remember in it. She was apparently, oh, wait. I retract. I have seen these movies. I just don't remember a damn thing about her. The Good Son. She's in all 3 Santa Claus movies. She's in What Lies Beneath with Harrison Ford. She's in Sixth Day. She's in The Covenant, which is terrible. And then she's in, the next thing she does is, like, that people would actually probably have seen, is Room, that Brie Larson movie where they're stuck in a room.
Not like, The Room, the classic.
Not the far superior The Room, but the Oscar bait Room. Now, that was Wendy Crewson. Now, the other actress is, who plays the daughter, is Lizelle Simmons. My apologies if I don't pronounce that correctly. Her acting career has consisted of, I'm gonna hold for applause because there's nothing here. She has not done anything except for this movie, really. So apparently
showed up, played Harrison Ford's daughter, retired.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it seems like. And then, I'm not gonna get into it, but apparently she was wow, she had a. Okay, she is involved in a very high dollar amount lawsuit over, like, misappropriation of funds to a trust and all that. But interesting. She doesn't need to act anymore. I'll tell her that. I'll say that. But She only really did two movies, so she hasn't done anything worth remembering. Whereas Holly Berry is Holly Berry, you know. I would
But
say,
now, which love interest slash family and love interest is used more effectively in the movie?
I mean, it's got to be the family. It's got to
Yeah.
be Marshall. It's Marshall is what it is. It's got to be Marshall's family because they are purposeful hostages. They are integral hostages. You see the horror of what Gary Oldman's doing through their eyes because he executes the press secretary, whatever that chick's name is, in front of them. They witness the other guy getting shot in the head. It's very, they're very intentionally being used as pawns to draw out both Harrison Ford or as the Secret Service man in the belly of the plane that they refer to him as, because they don't know it's the president yet. Or they're basically just using them to torture through talking to Glenn Close and, you know, being threatening and all that kind of stuff. Halle Berry, on the other hand, basically is just ends up as a love interest
Yeah.
out of shared trauma. And she is, like I said, she's used to find a guy who's not even the right guy. She's used to find the mole that's on the inside that's the trigger man of the bomb, but she doesn't even find the right guy. So she's given a job and fails at it. So yes, it goes through the first family.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, that's And then plus we get to see Gary Oldman's interactions with the family, which are some of the high points of his character.
So great. They're so great. But then again, Gary Oldman is like one, he's like one click below Gary Oldman in The Professional in this. Like, he's not the psychopath like cop that he is in The Professional with everyone.
Yeah.
But he's got this like cartoonish Russian accent, and he is definitely over the top at times, but he's not dialed up to 11. He's at about a 9.
Oh, and this is not Gary Oldman. This is Sari Rockman because he looks like Sam Rockwell.
Sorry, Rockman. Wow. Now in my head, I'm thinking, what would the combination of those two actually look like? And yes, it would actually be named Sari Rockman. There's no other name for that unholy abomination.
Hey, you combine Gary Oldman with Sam Rockwell, we might get the best actor of a generation.
Definitely get a guy who would win a few Oscars, you know, and. It's funny because Sam Rockwell's like current IMDb photo kind of looks like Gary Oldman in this movie.
That's why I was like, is that Sam Rockwell?
No, it's Gary Oldman's 90s goatee is a little thicker, you know, it's a little more of a beard than anything. But yeah, that's pretty wild. All right, so we're about halfway through.
Yep.
How is your dragon whiskey?
So I was incorrect. Kagan is the Tommy region of Japan is not northern Japan. It's not the mainland Japan, and it's not Hokkaido, which is the bigger island off the north end. It's the third biggest island that's kind of off the edge of Osaka. That's where Kame is. It is still one of the mountainous regions, but. So I had my first glass chilled with a little or on the rocks. Now I'm having it neat. And honestly, chilling it kind of does it a disservice because it take like when you chill whiskey, sometimes it like dulls the flavor a bit. So that's what they say, don't drink rich whiskey poor.
Yeah, there you go. That makes sense.
Cause you chill bad whiskey to make it taste better.
Okay.
But with good
Fair enough.
whiskey, you drink it neat with only, you add like a drop of water because it interacts with one of the molecules in the whiskey. But yeah, this whiskey's delicious.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, my juices from Departed Souls in Jersey City. I didn't realize. I looked a little more at this sexy Statue of Liberty we got going on here. Apparently she's got like a tat sleeve of, I don't know, roses or something, or like a tree branch. Maybe it's an olive branch. I don't know. I didn't know Statue of Liberty was this sexy and just chilled on park benches in Jersey City. I was unaware. They don't teach you that in school. You know why? Because they don't want you to know the truth. That's why. just like the truth of what the governments are doing in Air Force One and Executive Decision, which, by the way, you probably noticed when Mike gave the list, one of them was not whose politics are better.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about the Middle East versus Russia. Not exactly a good topic right now.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, we're just gonna look at the characters, not necessarily their
motivations. Like, I was thinking, I was like, do we talk about their motivations? Because I'm pretty sure the one is like just left of Palestine. It's like almost Iranian, you know? I was like, oh wait. I think they're just gonna go general, because he does mention the Nation of Islam at one point. And I was like, oh, we should probably, yeah, we'll just probably go generic Middle East here. Which apparently they did for like a lot of the TV like adaptations of it. They cut Islam out and just left it up to your imagination.
Yeah, that's so like both of these movies came out only with, I think they're both like at most 5 years apart from 9/11 as well.
Well, I was gonna say they're 1 year apart from each other, 96 and 97, and then that would be 5 and 4 years from 9/11. But yeah. And one of which would have been more favorably looked at on 9/11, I guess.
Yeah.
One would be in poor taste. The other would be, you know, Russia. But all right, so what's next?
I think we go with the best death.
So are we just nominating our best deaths, or?
I'll let you pick. Who do you, what do you think the best death from each movie is?
I mean, personally, I think Gary Oldman's is great. Like, Gary Oldman's is great.
That
And the
Gary
only one I
Oldman
would
and Steven Seagal are my, would be my picks.
say, those are the ones we got to put him against. Because other than that, it's really just a lot of random terrorists getting shot, you know? And the only other one you can think of that would come close would be Xander Berkeley's at the end of Air Force One. Because he's the sympathizer in the Secret Service, which, when you actually think about what he does is he's in the Secret Service. He's the guy on Air Force One that unlocks the ammo cabinet, the armory, so that Barry Oldman and crew can grab them and take over the plane. Now, someone in the Situation Room with Glenn Close does posit that they had a man on the inside. That's the only way they could have gotten the cabinet open. Xander Berkeley's character of Gibbs is the only one left alive at the end of the movie. He is the last of all of these people, terrorists included, Secret Service. He's the lone survivor. He could have very easily ended on someone else.
Yep.
He does not have to shoot William H. Macy and ultimately die in a fiery plane wreck out in the middle of the ocean. He very much could have just gotten away with it, could have gone home. He could have been like, you know what? I got my money or whatever it was. I can just move on with my life. The entire terrorist cell that I work for is dead.
It's true. It's true. So now, between Gary Oldman's death and Steven Seagal's death, which one is better? Because my vote is Seagal.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see the argument being made for it because
I'm not gonna lie, Steven Seagal being who he is and the story surrounding the movie adds to my enjoyment of it a bit.
I'm also a sucker for like a good dummy getting thrown through the air. So when his the puppet dummy or CGI dummy is put in there and flies away, it's pretty great. It's pretty great. Whereas Gary Oldman is kicked out of the plane with a strap around his neck that breaks his neck, and then the strap is around his neck. Harrison Ford says, "Get off my plane," punches him and pulls the ripcord, and that gets the parachute to pull and break his neck. And then we get the nice shot of Gary Oldman parachuting through the sky with a broken neck, just kind of like looking at the camera as he floats by. But if in the grand scheme of whose scene is more iconic, Gary Oldman dies after one of the most memorable lines in movie history, you know?
Yeah, get off my airplane.
Get off my plane. But I will say yes. I think I'll go with Seagal. Seagal's death is, even though it's a stupidly heroic death for such a dick, it's pretty funny when his little puppet body gets flying through the air.
Apparently, his head was supposed to explode from the air pressure, but Seagal was against that.
We're going to go to full Total Recall with it. Have his head explode.
But yeah.
Wonder why Steven was above. I wonder why he was against that, you know?
All right, so right now we are at a dead tie.
Right.
Like
Well,
both
I've.
movies at zero because they both won one of the negative categories.
There you go. Yeah. So we were at negative one each. Now we're back up to zero. Okay. So what's next? Is we got what, two left?
Three.
Three left. Okay, what's the next one?
All right, the villain teams.
Okay, so the teams themselves of the villains,
Yeah,
not
well,
including the villains.
do you want to do leaders then teams or teams then leaders?
Let's go teams and leaders. Teams and
Okay.
leaders. All right. So it's interesting because both teams are just filled with cannon fodder. They're just filled with dead meats. Like, these dudes aren't meant to survive, and there are no like number one henchman guys, you
No.
know? So it's really like who do we rather? I mean, okay, we're gonna have to dance around the politics of this one because it's more of like who would you rather watch die? Middle Eastern terrorists or Russian terrorists?
Or who would you rather watch kill the terrorists? Harrison Ford or John Leguizamo?
Yeah, or John Leguizamo. Now it is pretty funny because Harrison Ford very much diehard. See, John McClane's the plane for a while, and on the other hand, John Leguizamo's team has set up like the perfect surveillance for the entirety of the Boeing 747 or whatever it is. They're like up in the cargo area, like up top. They got little cameras pointing down and all that. They've got everything secured. But really, when they're about to go, they're just kind of like hunched behind panels in certain parts of the plane, and they're just waiting for the go codes. But they never really get it because Kurt Russell keeps coming up with a different idea, or the bomb or whatever keeps not being defused or whatever. So when things ultimately do go down, they happen very fast, an executive decision. Whereas Harrison Ford is picking them off one by one by like setting traps. He's waiting. He's being cheeky. You know, he's doing all kinds of stuff. So
Which
I
is what
definitely
I
would go with.
prefer.
Yeah, I would rather see Harrison Ford as President Kick-Ass, you know, doing
As
that.
John McClane in the air.
Right, as President McClane. But yeah, and then as opposed to John Leguizamo's team, which is basically just there so Joe Morton can successfully talk Oliver Platt through defusing a bomb. They're basically just playing defense. Like, they're playing defense in a game where the offense doesn't know they're playing, you
Yeah.
know? And it makes for a good tense, like, tension and good watch. But ultimately, you're like, oh, come on, man. I want more out of this. I want someone to like catch a terrorist in that little elevator and break his neck or something and like pull him down. Like, just I want something crazy to happen, but it never really does until the very end of the movie.
Yeah, that's I'm going Air Force One on this one.
Yeah. So, and that leads to the actual villains, the main course here, our villains, our head of our terrorist units.
Which this is very one-sided, if
I
you.
mean, there isn't, I w there is a counterpart in executive decision, but there is only Gary Oldman.
Yeah, Gary Oldman's the clear choice here. It's not
It's
even.
only Gary Oldman. Now, granted, it's even in this case, because even though these movies start the same, they have the same general idea that a plane is taken over for political reasons. They're these terrorists have their different motives. They are standard anti-American villains, or your standard RAVs, your Russians, Arabs, and villain Russian Arab villains. Then when you actually like look at whose motivations are better, like who is motivated, I guess, to be a villain for the right for better reasons. Gary Oldman's reasons are purely for like he feels burned by his country not being tough enough.
Yeah.
It's like what is it? I'm trying to think of the damn movie. What movie was it? It also made it seem there's a different movie I'm thinking of. It's not coming to my mind, but it's kind of like Red Skull in Captain America. He thinks Hitler didn't go far enough. It's Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. That's what it is. It's Mads Mikkelsen's character doesn't think Hitler went far enough. So he's kind of like Hitler is a pussy. I am the real deal. And that's kind of like what Oldman is in this. But whereas it's a very similar thought on executive decision, except he's lying to his own team about what he's doing. He's the only one. Like he intends to fully spread this virus throughout the United States, like through this Eastern Seaboard. His team does not know that. And when they do find out, a couple of them are like, not cool with that, man. So at least Gary Oldman's team is also well motivated by him to be on his side. They're all of one mind when it comes to being terrorists. And Gary Oldman, I gotta admit, if I had to choose, I'd probably want to be on his team because he's not so quick to kill you. Because executive decision, dude, he kills at least, I think, two of his men. He definitely kills one, I know that much. But it's like it's the old theory of, and the show Harley Quinn did this on HBO. What Batman villain's gang would you rather be in? No one wants to be part of the Joker's gang because he'll kill you whatever feeling he gets. There's the ever-present sense of you're gonna die. But in Air Force One, you feel like, I believe in Gary. I believe in Oldman's motivations. I think we can actually do this, I think we can take this man down.
Yep, I think your reasoning is so sound. Plus, it's Gary fucking Oldman.
It is Gary, yeah, and it's Gary Oldman with the best wubbing it up like Russian accent. It's phenomenal. It
Gary
is.
Oldman being comically evil is amazing. Like, just like this Kung Fu Panda 2, like, it just works. It's a recipe for success.
Nobody ever mentioned, like, obviously everyone always mentions how great an actor Gary Oldman is, but no one ever mentions how convincingly unhinged he can be. And when you look at The Professional, you look at this, there's all like Fifth Element's another one. It's a little more cartoony, but you look at it and you go, you know what? I believe that that's a real person. I don't believe this is a man just acting in a movie. Like Gary Oldman has kind of convinced me that he might be legitimately insane. He might legitimately be crazy enough to do this. And he's just that look, like it's always in his eyes. Like you see that look in his eyes where you're like, okay, this man, there's something off about this man, Whereas in Executive Decision, and because I've danced around and I feel the man deserves the justice, even though he is a British man playing a Muslim, David Suchet he's a good actor. He's good and convincing. He's very threatening in the role as well. But I don't know. You can't compete with Gary, man. You just can't compete with Gary.
Yeah, it was clear. Air Force One is the clear winner.
Absolutely. All right.
And
So, what
now
was.
we get to protagonist.
Yeah, we get to our main hero, which obviously we have Harrison Ford, President Kick-Ass on the one side, versus Kurt Russell on the other,
Yeah,
I
that's
guess.
the thing. If we got Snake Plissken, Kurt Russell, it's a competition here.
Dude, imagine just put Snake Plissken in this role, and I would love it. That would be awesome.
Because of how it plays out, there's no one to compete with Harrison Ford. You have to combine all three potential protagonists from Executive Decision to come close to Harrison Ford in Air Force One.
Yeah, and I mean, you're looking at The thing is, the deck is stacked against Executive Decision the second Harrison Ford is cast in that role. Because to this point, Harrison Ford has already played Jack Ryan a couple times. He has played an airport novel protagonist a couple times. So he knows how to play this role. He's also 1997 Harrison Ford. So he hasn't quit like giving a shit yet. He's still down for it. Like the one little weird like lull in the beginning when he gives that speech in the beginning about how we don't negotiate with terrorists, all that, he does give a very sleepwalking vibe to that speech. Like almost as if he doesn't want to be giving it. Kind of like when he purposely tanked the voiceover in Blade Runner because he knew it was so bad. He purposely tanked it and made it shitty. That's kind of what he's doing here. But then the rest of the movie, he definitely plays President Kickass like so well. And for Kurt Russell, who I'm going to pull up his actual job title in the movie because I'm not entirely
He's like an
certain.
analyst.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not entirely certain we actually get what he does, like what his real job is, but he is definitely an analyst. It is, here we go. Okay. Lieutenant Colonel Austin Travis is Steven Seagal. Then we have Dr. David Grant, U.S. Army intelligence consultant. Okay, so this guy is presumably some sort of CIA agent or some sort of FBI or some sort of intelligence agent, and definitely. They don't say he works for the department. No, he's not with the company, nothing like that. So really, this is just a nerd. He's just a nerd that knows governments. And his expertise comes in handy once he's on the plane, but he has no like military training. President Kickass is he's a Medal of Honor winner. He's a war hero from Vietnam. He's a helicopter pilot who flew like X amount of successful missions and all that kind of stuff. So the only unbelievable thing with Harrison Ford and Air Force One is when there's any kind of tension that he has to land the plane at the end. Because he's a goddamn pilot. He would know how to land the plane. Whereas Kurt Russell is just a dude that has to land a plane by feel and was like an amateur pilot for a day in the beginning of the movie.
I wish they had like a Homer Simpson moment where he has to land the plane and he's talking to the guy on the phone. He's like, Homer, I'm gonna be honest, I don't know anything about airplanes, but I do know things something about you. And this guy over here just said that he doesn't think you could land that plane. Who
Right,
is
exactly.
that? I'll show that guy.
Right, exactly. It's the point. The thing I would much rather watch is the getting to that part, which for Kurt Russell and Executive Decision is really just a lot of things. Action is about to happen, and he stops him at the last second because he has a different idea, or he figures something else out. So he plays a lot of like. He provides a lot of blue balls for like the military dudes there. Like he gets them all amped up, ready to go, and then he pulls them back. And then Harrison Ford's like, you know what? Gotta take things into my own hands. I'm gonna be President Kickass, you know? So then John McClane's the plane for a while. And it's funny because it shouldn't be exciting what he's doing because he's really in a small plate, like small space in the bottom of Air Force One. But he's picking these dudes off one by one. He's fighting guys. He's fighting dudes into refrigerators of orange juice and shit. Like there's weirdly like compelling set, like a weirdly compelling set down there. Whereas Kurt Russell is just sitting in a room, like a hole of an airplane in front of a shitty laptop, you know, and that's about all he does. Until he has to slick back his hair and put a hoodie on at the end and pretend to be a hostage taker, which I gotta say, if the real terrorists were paying attention at all, they would notice that the white guy wasn't part of their game, like wasn't part of their group, and they would just shoot him. But no, they don't see
I'd say
that.
that's
It's
correct.
like, hey, wait a minute, do we have a white guy? No, we don't have a white guy. What about the fat guy? Oh shit, is this two different Hudson Tickets? Did we fuck up our
Wait,
dates?
wait. He could be Serbian.
Right. Oh god, we didn't talk to the Chechens, did we? Fuck. I knew it. They were mentioning something at the last cookout. They mentioned something about a hostage shaking. I didn't think it was going to be this. I just didn't put the together. So that's what I want to see. I want to see that movie. Terrorist cookout. They
Isn't
discuss
that a Family
logistics.
Guy when Peter becomes Petopian and just invites all the Middle Eastern leaders over?
Yeah. Yeah. But all right, so Mike, what's our final score here?
All right, so since the tie at 0-0, Air Force One swept the rest of the way, so it went 3-0.
Technically 3-0, but it's weird because
Really,
watching these.
it's 4-1 with each receiving a negative point.
Yeah. So it's kind of a wash on a couple of those, but yeah, I mean. It's funny because when we break it down like this, and the thing is we're kind of pitting, we're picking and choosing what to pit against each other. But when you actually look at the basic plots of these movies, they're nearly identical, except one of them isn't the president.
Yeah, that's it's not a situation like last week where it's like there's a similar concept, but it is played very differently.
Right. And also, and I have to get out there, set the record straight because I just discovered it today. Apparently, there is another podcast out there, Mike,
Yeah.
that whose entire purpose is to do what we've been doing
Oh,
the last
God.
couple weeks. So I'm gonna pull it up because I was able to pull it up. Where's the first one? Clash of the Titles is what it's named. So I gotta give them, they got a better title than we do.
Oh, they
Yeah,
definitely do.
they got a better title than movies that are basically the same. That's not so catchy. Now, if we're looking at actual output too, like we got some catching up to do. They have 451 episodes.
Jesus.
One of which is this is this matchup, is executive
Hey,
decision
I'm curious
decision.
how many episodes we have exactly. We got a lot now.
Yeah, we're not at 400 though. We're not at 450 something. I'd say we're at least maybe 200. But yeah. So I saw that earlier. I was like, oh no, oh no. It's like that's their entire purpose. It looks like they kind of pick one aspect of most of their stuff and kind of compare the two. But I think this one might be more of a these movies are basically the same kind of thing. But yeah, I feel like I had to mention that just so people know that we did not do this on purpose, just in case. It's this thing, the warning you see at the end of every movie. All these things are fictional and made up, and it's purely coincidental that they relate to anything else, you know? But so Air Force One takes it. I got to agree. I feel like if I'm going to rewatch, I'm definitely going to rewatch Air Force One over Executive Decision, but it is close. It is a close one. But so before we talk about what we're doing next week, Mike, where can people find us?
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, and just about anywhere else you get your podcasts from. Thanks to Spotify Podcasts. We're also on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook at Happy Hour Films Podcast. Go like and follow us.
Yeah, do it. Do it or we'll kill you. So next week we are in again similar end of the world territory. We are discussing Meteor Movies, Armageddon versus Deep Impact. Now, my wife has not agreed to join us, but she will most likely watch Armageddon with me because she loves the damn movie for some reason, even though it's not because of Michael Bay, which is the right reason to like the movie, even though it's terrible. But I don't know. I got to feel like just based off of the vague memories I have of both, because I have not seen them in forever, I don't know. I'm going to probably be leaning Deep Impact the entire time. Probably the entire time.
It's been a while since I've seen both, so like while Michael Bay being involved would lead me to believe that, I can't confirm.
Yeah, I mean, oh boy. So, till next week when we talk about We're talking about Ben Affleck drunkenly commentating over Armageddon on the DVD. Which is phenomenal. If you can find that, I highly recommend it. His DVD commentary for it is great. But until we talk about Deep Impact and Armageddon, I have been Ross Bacon.
I've been Mike McGuigan.
We'll see you guys next time. So long.